We kicked their motherfucking ass.
That's right.
We kicked their motherfucking ass.
The joyous co-counsel.
Alright, co-counsel for Mondo.
Right. Too nervous to say anything after that.
Alright, look, sit down.
I'm standing up.
Oh, okay, stand up for the resident.
Wow. Really?
Just sit
down. Yeah, you cave chested punk.
No.
Buck Davis, what happened today in court? What was the verdict that was given?
Well, what happened today in court was that we won. The verdict that was given was that the defendants were found not guilty on every charge except one. That charge being that they threatened to print articles and write letters exposing the complaining witness as a hard drug dealer and as a dishonest person, as a ripoff. The judge found that they did in fact do that and found that there was enough of a relationship to their attempt to collect some money that he had ripped off from other people to technically justify a conviction under that statute. Not guilty as to everything else.
That's the crime of... What about sentencing? What is the status of the defendants now in terms of prison?
Well, the judge found that he believed that even though they had now been convicted, he was convinced that the character of the defendants was such that there was no risk in them remaining free prior to sentencing. That's a significant step from the original $100,000 bond for both when both were presumed innocent. Sentencing will be sometime in September. We have no idea what's on the court's mind. But he indicated, at least throughout the opinion that he gave, is that he liked and to some extent respected the political integrity of the defendants and did not believe that this was activity which they regularly did and couldn't bring himself to believe the accusations of violence. Obviously, him holding those opinions, we believe, are favorable for sentencing.
You say that the defense won. What do you mean by that?
Well, we said that we would expose the complaining witness as a deceitful thief, a hard drug dealer with no sense of its consequences, no sense of its consequences for people who were engaged in that, who was prepared to testify to things which were not true in order to help himself. The judge found, as a matter of fact, that that is precisely what he was, that he had in fact stolen that which Pun and Craig went up to ask him about, that he was in fact dishonest, that he did in fact deal in and use hard drugs. So we said we would do that, and we did. That's what the judge found. We said that we would prove that Pun and Craig were in no way involved in using violence, using weapons, or making threats of violence, either on behalf of themselves or other people, with regard to this entire thing. And that's what the judge found. And we said that they would not be found to have been involved in any conspiracy to commit any illegal acts. And that's in fact what the judge found. He found them not guilty on both conspiracy counts. So, the thing that we had admitted that we had done and would do, which was expose hard drug dealers for the benefit of the community, that fact which was admitted and admitted proudly by Pun and Craig was the only fact which under this particular law on which they were convicted.
How is it proven that this was a political case?
First, the judge said that he believed that Pun Plamondon had good grounds for his consistent allegations that he was singled out for surveillance and activity by police agencies. Second, he said and found, or said that he believed that the activities which were engaged in by the Rainbow People's Party was not in fact a threat to the community, and that he respected them and that they had been well received by him in this community. Third, he found that paranoia inside the State Police Department, particularly the intelligence agency, and those are his words, are at the base of what happened in this case, which he characterized as wasteful, stupid, time-consuming, foolish, was the way he characterized this prosecution. That's political victory.
Well, we had a sure victory today. We were charged with 6 different counts. We got acquitted on 5 of the counts. The one count that we got convicted on was we were found guilty of threatening to expose a hard drug dealer and a rip-off artist to the community and through our newspaper and through letters. We got convicted of that, and we'll be going to sentencing in September after pretrial investigation. We feel that it was a positive victory in that the lies and slanders that were used about us being violent, about us using weapons and being armed robbers and extortionists, those lies were laid bare and the judge acquitted us. 6 months ago, the State Attorney General's Office and Michigan State Police brought these outrageous charges of us, against us, charging us with armed robbery, charging us with extortion and criminal usury, and they held us in jail under $100,000 bond, myself for 55 days and Craig for 30 days. They finally brought us to court and brought us to trial, and we maintained throughout all of that this was a political prosecution that was brought not in the interest of justice, but rather in the interest of stopping independent political activity and the activity of the Rainbow People's Party and of myself and Craig Blazier. Today, when the judge handed down his verdict, he essentially established what we had been maintaining all along, that we were not armed robbers, that we were not armed, that we did not carry weapons, that we did not use threats of violence, that we did not conspire to commit criminal usury. The state had us charged under 6 counts. We were acquitted of 5 counts. We were found guilty of threatening to expose a hard drug dealer and a rip-off artist to members of our community. And for that, we were convicted. And in September, we will go before the judge to be sentenced. He's aware of the facts in this case. We're aware. And we feel that that now that the facts are known, the entire picture is painted in a different light and with a different brush, and that we're not what the state has been trying to paint us as, violent and vicious animals.
We waived the jury today because we were convinced that after 2 stages of a planned 3-stage voir dire, we waived the jury today because we thought it was in the best interest of the defense. We've been asking the jurors from Wexford County questions for a day and a half now. The results of that are that while we found them to be honest and straightforward and not vengeful or duplicitous in any way, that they were unable to comprehend. Can I ask a question or not?
Just start from the beginning. You can do any of them, man, because
they don't even cut out. Right. We waived the jury because we thought it was in the best interest of the defense. We've been asking the jurors from Wexford County questions for a day and a half now. During that period of time, it became clear to us that they were not able to sufficiently comprehend within the time that we would have to try this case the difference in the social concepts, lifestyle, and culture of the defendants and, to some extent, the complaining witness as opposed to themselves. We wanted very much to have a jury because we believe that the institution of the jury is a strong one and should be preserved, that it's the last area of American government where the people do directly control what happens in terms of a governmental decision. And we uphold that principle and uphold it strongly and would never have waived the jury had we not engaged in the process of talking with them first. But we did talk with them. We felt that within the context of this particular case, the circumstances were too difficult, the complexity of the issues such that Judge Peterson, who has dealt with us fairly in the past, and although he has denied motions that we believe were valid motions and should have been granted, and he is a judge and we would prefer to have a jury, he has felt honest, he's dealt honestly with us, he's been straightforward, and we believe that he will be fair. And our position is that the state's case is so weak, and the facts will show the innocence of Pond and Craig beyond such a degree that if we can get a fair hearing, then we will be able to win. And that was the reason that we did it. The questions that we asked the jury over the day and a half had to do with their perceptions of youth in Wexford County and their perceptions of youth outside of this particular area, how they related to and felt about young people with long hair, the use of marijuana, those things that are normally associated with youth culture today. And then we became more pointed somewhat in our questioning and talked specifically about the political principles of the defendants, the fact that they are members of the Rainbow People's Party, the fact that they advocate the legalization of marijuana, the fact that they use marijuana and advocate its use, those kinds of questions, in addition to questions about their opinions on national affairs, their ideas about the relative importance of various community issues, their ideas about their relationship to what is happening to the youth of this country, particularly in the metropolitan areas and its influence on Wexford County. After exploring those areas, we simply felt that the gap in perception, the gap in feelings and concepts of what life is like, particularly for young people in this country, was too great between them and the defendants in this case, and that it was so great that we would not have time to explain sufficiently during the context of the trial enough about what the reality of life is for young people in this country on a national scale and the relationship of the Rainbow People's Party to it, for them to be able to judge and intelligently determine guilt or innocence in this matter. And so reluctantly, we gave up our principle.
We waived our right to a jury trial today after spending a day and a half questioning the potential jurors. And in that time, we found that due to the isolation of this community and the people of this community from large metropolitan areas, from large numbers of young people and large youth communities, that they would carry to our trial certain misconceptions, various fears, and other prejudices, which would make it nearly impossible for them to give us a fair trial on the facts in this case. We won a jury trial, and we tried, as I said, for a day and a half to get that jury. We would rather go to trial before a jury, but the number of jurors that were available to us in this process was not sufficient to be able to give us a jury of peers, and the process of overcoming whatever fears or misconceptions that the present jurors would have of us is a long process, which we won't be able to do in this case, and so we determined just to go before the judge and put the facts before the judge, and we feel that after dealing with him for 4 or 5 months, as we have been, that he will make an honest, straightforward attempt to hear the facts in this case and render a fair verdict and approach us without misconception and without previous prejudice. In working 4 or 5 months with Judge Peterson, that he's a basically honest man and a fair man, and we think he will approach this case in an honest and fair way and try us on the facts of this case and guard against whatever prejudices or misconceptions he may have. We still feel we have a strong case, and we feel if we do get a fair trial, it will be victorious. Various misconceptions, various fears and prejudices that would make it impossible for us to be able to explain this case adequately to them and for them to understand the lifestyles and way of life of Craig and myself. The people up here, it appears to us, are isolated from large metropolitan areas. They're isolated from large numbers of young people and large communities of young people. And to just understand the everyday life that Craig and I live is a most difficult task. And for them to be able to understand the very difficult situation that we're in, and this doesn't mean that we have any dislike for the potential jurors of Cadillac or the people of Cadillac or this community. It only means that we feel that there's such a cultural gap between the jurors or the potential jurors and ourselves that they would have a hard time understanding us, understanding our lives. We feel that we have a strong case, and that Judge Peterson will give us an honest, fair hearing. And with that, we feel that we'll be able to walk out victorious. Through working with Judge Peterson for the last 4 or 5 months, we found him to be basically fair and honest. Of course, he's made some rulings that we haven't agreed with, but basically we think he's an honest man, and he will listen to the facts in this case and make an honest determination, and that's what we ask for.
The trial is over except for the closing arguments, which should start tomorrow morning. The defense put its case on today. The defense called 2 witnesses, the 2 defendants. We put their character into evidence and said that they were open to cross-examination on their prior life. Any part of their life was open to cross-examination by the police, but by the prosecution. They chose not to ask such questions. They asked no questions at all of Pomandon. And they asked less than 20 questions, according to my estimation, of Craig. And then they said, that's all. And that was it. The whole case went in that fast, that easy.
What did their case consist of? You don't have to mic me.
The prosecution's case? Well, I believe that it's obviously a weak case. One, there are 4 witnesses to the alleged incident. One of them says it happened one way, which involves violence, threats, and just reprehensible conduct. The other 3 say that that didn't happen. One of them is an independent witness who has no particular interest in either side, even though he did admit under cross-examination that he'd rather see us win because he thought we were right, and the 2 defendants. And so if you think of the case as involving nobody but those 4, it's like 3-1 for the defendants, which one would assume that under any kind of reasonable doubt standard should provide, a good chance of winning.
How would you characterize the testimony of Uwe, the one person who has the opposite point of view as to what happened? I mean, is it simply 3-1, or what about his testimony?
Well, he is by no means the slimiest political prosecution witness that we've known even recently in this country, or particularly in the history of political prosecutions. I mean, he's fairly much of a lightweight, even at being a rat. But he's totally incredible. He looks very strange. His face gets very red. His eyes are glazed. He looks like he's on some kind of something while he's on the stand. The three statements that he's given thus far have all differed from each other, and to some extent have differed internally. I believe that if a mathematical standard of reasonable doubt were actually applied, and there was no witness in the case but him, nobody testified except him, they rested and we rested, that still we would be entitled to win the case, even on just his inherent incredibility. He's an awful witness. The hostility that he had incurred in and around Traverse City because of his extremely dishonest dealings, selling incense as opium, that kind of thing, plus all the potential criminal charges that he faced, plus the pressure which was brought to bear by the article which appeared in the Ann Arbor Sun exposing him as a ripoff, I believe made him go to them and essentially put forward a story which would make them think that they could use him to bust people that were more important to them than he was.
What are the exact incidents that aroused the anger of people in Traverse City, including
Well,
what kind of abuser was he? Can you expand on that?
Well, he was within the code of ethics of at least non-dishonest people who happened to, say, distribute marijuana. He was an openly dishonest person. He didn't deliver as much as he said he would. He charged outrageous prices. He sold things which were not what he represented them to be. He got apparently 8 ounces of common incense, maybe under the impression that it was actually opium, but at any rate, he soon found out that it was nothing but incense and testified that he continued to sell it as opium. In addition, he had no compunction whatever about giving hard drugs to practically anybody. He testified at trial that he had gotten some morphine just the night before, which he was going to give to some girls in Traverse City. That's the kind of person he is. The reason that we could only put on 2 witnesses for the defense had to do with the way that the prosecution had arranged the prosecution. They would never admit to giving Uwe any special consideration, but he apparently had no problem whatever admitting to any and every crime he had ever committed on the stand, and is apparently not very worried about what's going to happen to him. On the other hand, there are a number of people from Traverse City who we believe are a great deal more honest and honorable than Uwe Wagner, who were frightened with regard to testifying because the prosecutor said that he would consider any testimony from the stand as to prior involvement in drug dealings or whatever would be incriminating statements and could be used in a prosecution. Other statements which the prosecution made indicated that Uwe Wagner had apparently testified for them in various places before and is prepared to do so in the future. Consequently, all of the people that could have testified the most about him were also the people that were most threatened by prosecution themselves. For that reason, we couldn't actually show everything that he was. We could only do it in a limited manner. We felt that this was an extraordinary hindrance in the trial and made a motion to dismiss on that basis. It was denied.
Can I take it up to that? But do you see what I mean about a clear open contradiction? This was so
I know, wait a minute.
We put on our whole defense today. That was Craig and I testified. We had intended to put on several other witnesses, but the prosecutor indicated that
any testimony that came from other witnesses that could be incriminating would be used against them. And in order to point out some of the major contradictions in Uwe Wagner's story, we would have to call people who had dealings with him and who had previous engagements and encounters with him. And to do that, they would have to testify to illegal acts and incriminate themselves. So the defense was really hampered in not being able to put on a full defense as we had intended and as we would have been able to. And this points to one of the major contradictions in the state's case, in that they have a man, Uwe Wagner, on a stand who testifies to selling incense as opium. In other words, to the people who were buying it, they were buying opium, but it was actually just common everyday incense. He's testified to doing that. He's testified to having morphine, methadone, Ritalin, Speed, and other hard and dangerous drugs in his possession and giving them away, selling them, distributing them to people in northern Michigan. But the state has indicated that they're not interested in taking any action against him. In fact, they have him so wired that he has testified in other proceedings before this one, and they indicate that he'll testify in proceedings after this one. So what they have is a puppet on a string, and they're going to leave him run as long as they can. But when we want to bring witnesses to defend ourselves against these charges, then they say that they'll prosecute them. So it's clearly a ploy and a tactic on the part of the Assistant Attorney General to railroad us into the penitentiary.
What did you testify to on the stand today?
Well, we testified to the fact that we were there, and we saw Uwe Wagner, and but none of the visit that, as he testified to, in that we took his property and that we threatened him and had weapons, all of that testimony has been refuted. It was refuted first by Bruce Peterson, and it was refuted by Craig and myself today. We did visit him. We did make arrangements for him to pay off a debt that he owed to some other people in Ann Arbor, to a third party, and we left. And essentially that's all that's happened. He said that we stole his property and that we threatened him, and that just didn't happen, and the testimony bears that out.
But what do you think of the way the prosecution has conducted itself in this case?
Well, the state of Michigan and the state attorney general's office has spent literally tens of thousands of dollars to railroad me and Craig into the penitentiary. And then today on the last day of trial, when we finally take the stand, they don't even want to cross-examine us. I mean, they rented a helicopter and assigned two detective sergeants as well as a driver to that helicopter and went up and took photographs. They flew Professor Dr. Oscar Tosi in from halfway across the United States to testify about phone taps and voice prints. They flew in Lieutenant Nash, the Michigan State Police, who was supposed to be the world's foremost voice print expert, to have him testify. They flew in another expert from the Michigan State Police to testify that a table knife was used to cut some speaker wires in the house. They paraded five or six police through the stand and had them sitting in the courtroom and off duty. I mean, they spent just tons of money to try to get us in the penitentiary, and they based all that on the testimony of one self-admitted junkie, hard drugs dealer, a rip-off artist, and a most totally incredible person that you've ever heard speak in your life. And that's what they base their case on, and that's what they spend tens of thousands of dollars on, just to try to railroad two people into the penitentiary who they think are some threat to them.